Yet, strange to say, whereas on Earth there is some strange satisfaction to savage men in a sack, here there was none. It was all a hollow sham. The goods we plundered were useless to us, the wine we tried to drink made no impression on our ghostly gullets, the whole thing was a fraud. There was not even the satisfaction one gets in a dream, when one appears to taste the food one eats, and so forth. Even in our dreams we are still in touch with our physical bodies, and so can supply the full and proper interpretation. In hell, though we can still suffer pain, yet we cannot enjoy pleasure. That is the first great law in hell, if I could use the word law in a place which is essentially the negation of all law. I then set to work to establish myself on my new throne. I was surprised to find, however, that I had lost a considerable number of Danton's former subjects. I did not know it at the time, but I learnt afterwards that the overthrow of Danton had enabled some who had been growing weary of the sort of life they led to hope faintly for something, gone west 112, better, and this once done, help was vouchsafed them to escape and begin the first steps towards progress. Thus out of the appalling nightmare of that battle arose the possibility of progress for a few, such is often the case in hell, showing how wonderfully out of evil God is able even there to bring forth good. Now I think you have heard enough, and this will form a convenient place at which to close my narrative for the time being. H. J. L. Then spoke Ink, Jack, it is time you were returning. Then I sank into unconsciousness. J. W. Gone West 113, Chapter 12, A Second Visit to the Emperor, H. J. L. had hardly ceased greeting me when the officer entered the room. He began almost at once, having established myself in my kingdom, I soon began to realize the terrors of kingship. Never for a single moment could I feel at peace. Rest there was none. Ever I had to be on the watch to suppress some revolt or defeat some ingenious plot. I felt like a hunted animal at bay, surrounded by a lot of snapping curs who were only watching for their chance when I was off my guard. Every diabolical cruelty I could devise I employed to terrorize my enemies, but it was of no avail. I could not kill them, and the only effect of my tortures was that they hated me the more. After a while I received a message from the Emperor congratulating me on my success, and inviting me to visit him. To refuse would have been to acknowledge that I was afraid of the Emperor, at the same time, my absence from the kingdom would be the signal, I knew, for a revolt. However, I decided to risk the latter danger and go and laugh in the Emperor's face. So I set out with a considerable guard. I was received with much pomp and splendor, or at least so it appeared. Really, of course, the whole show was a hollow fraud. The bands which played could only produce a discordant din, the tapestries which adorned the streets were dirty and tattered, the flowers which were strewed in my path were withered, and stank of rottenness, the pretty maids who preceded our procession were rendered hideous by the lines with which cruelty and lust had marked their faces. After meeting the Emperor's procession, we went together to witness a gladiatorial show. This finished, we proceeded to the palace, and there a great feast took place. It was the same empty show as all the rest. There was nothing real except what was vile, and how do you like the cares of kingship? Inquired the Emperor. Uneasy lies the head, eh? I laughed. It's better than being under your majesty, anyway. Very likely, still. I fancy you must get a little bit tired of being ever on the watch. I know I do. When I want a change, I take a spell on Earth again. It's wonderfully restful and refreshing after the strenuous life one has to lead here. For once my curiosity was greater than my wisdom, and I cried, "But how do you manage to return to Earth? I thought once we had lost our astral bodies." You are still a young man, he replied, and have much to learn. But I am surprised you do not know that simple fact. He looked at me thoughtfully, and then continued, if a spirit in hell makes an alliance with a mortal on earth, it is possible for the former to acquire, or at any rate borrow, for a short time, a temporary astral body. At times it is even possible for such a spirit to obtain for a short time a material body. Such men used to be known as wizards, and the women as witches. And the spirits they invoked were always regarded as devils. Of course, many of them were elementals, and a few may have been devils proper, but most of them were just human spirits, and not always bad ones either. Of course, it's a risky business playing about with sorcerers. They always try to reduce the spirit in partnership with them to the position of their abject slave. Their wills, of course, are strong, and if the spirit be some rather weak, vicious fuel, they can reduce him to a position of absolute subservience, at any rate for a time. But how can they enforce their commands? I cried. By the same methods by which you and I enforce ours. By the mere force of their wills. Just as we can inflict any kind of pain we choose on our subjects, so can these wizards on their spirit slaves. But, of course, with iron wills such as we have, the end, Gone West 114, always is that we can dominate the wizard and make him our slave. Then, indeed, for a short time we can have a glorious time. He rose. Let us now go and witness the play which is to be performed in the private theatre, and he referred no more to the subject of magic. But what had been said made a profound impression upon my mind. I was so struck with the idea that I failed to see the danger lurking in it. I have no doubt that the Emperor raised the subject with the object of luring me into this danger. But I did not perceive it. I have often wondered how it was that I did not perceive it. It may have been that the Emperor really had a stronger will than I, and so was able by a very strong exercise of that will to prevent me seeing what was passing in his innermost mind. It may have been, however, that I was so struck with the idea that I never strove to get to the bottom of it and find out what his real object was. Of course, I did not imagine for one moment that he made the suggestion with any other object than that of doing me harm. I thought he foresaw that if I left my dominion to go playing tricks on the earth, I should at once be deposed. This, indeed, I knew quite well would be the case, but I also felt certain I should find no difficulty in throwing out the usurper when I returned. In reality, he knew this too, but he also knew that after a time the effect of this new sin would be to render it impossible for me to return even to that division of hell. I should, in fact, be compelled to fall still lower. Thus he hoped to be rid of me. I did not know this and, being anxious to try the new experience for several reasons, determined to do so. My reasons were, firstly, that I wanted some rest, or at any rate change, from ever standing on guard in hell; secondly, it would be a new experience, and therefore of interest in itself; thirdly, the possibility of seeing the earth again filled me with a new sensation, which I can only compare with what a boy feels when he is homesick. I returned soon after to Paris of the Revolution, and of course found civil war in progress. One section had liberated Danton and placed him on the throne. I soon dealt with the matter, and Danton and the other ringleaders returned to the torture chambers. Gone West 115, Chapter 13, The Officer and the Wizard. Then I set myself to find a man who, on earth, had been a sorcerer. I discovered a good many, more than I expected, but most of them had only played at the game. The reason, of course, was that those who had really obtained any considerable knowledge in the subject had, on death, fallen even lower in hell than we were. I found one man, however, who had been associated with a far abler man who had fallen lower. The man in my dominion told me all he had learnt from the other, though he had not dared to practice it, and I soon discovered how to get in touch with a magician on earth. This student of the occult was a German, and lived in Prague, or, rather, on the threshold of that city. He knew a lot about magic, and had already discovered how to raise and control the spirits of the dead, in plain English, weak-willed spirits of the astral plane. He could also do something with the elementals. He was now working to raise a real devil from hell, and it was I that answered his invocation. I had set the old magician who was in hell to work before me, in spite of his prayers, for he was afraid. As his incantations rose, they came in contact with those from the man on earth. This stream of incantation soon made itself plain to me, and I was thus informed that there was one on earth who wanted such as I. Voluntarily I stepped into the stream of invocation, and joined my will to theirs. At once I seemed to be drawn through space, and found myself before him. The student of the occult, as he called himself, was standing in the middle of his magic circle, within which were two triangles forming a six-pointed star. All around it were pentagons and a whole host of other mystic signs. A brazier burnt in the room, and from it rose a heavy perfume which filled the room with smoke. The room itself was perfectly dark, and appeared to be a cellar with walls of stone, and floor of the same material. There were some cases with mummies along one side of the wall, and a few articles of furniture. But the larger part of the room was completely bare. Now, though I could see him, he as yet could not see me, and continued his incantations. I began to will that he should see me, and then I perceived lying outside the circle, and at some little distance from it, a woman. She was not dead, but in a trance, and I knew at once why she was there. She was mediumistic, and from her I could build up for the time being a temporary habitation of some sort. I moved towards her, and began to draw from her the more etherealized elements, at the same time exerting my powerful will to the intent that he should see me. Soon he did so. I doubt if, as yet, an ordinary mortal would have been able to, but he was possessed of clairvoyance, though not in the highest degree. As I became visible to him, I perceived that I gave out a kind of lurid red light. It was not much like the brilliant red fire of the opera when Mephistopheles appears, but it is evidently from some such phenomena as I was now producing that the tradition had grown up. I am not quite sure of the reason, whether it was due to the predominance of hatred in my aura, or simply because the wizard expected me to come in that form, but at any rate, if he expected horns and a cloven hoof, he did not get them. I could see that he was quaking with fear, but he pulled himself together and cried, "Come hither, slave, I command." "Slave be damned," I replied. "I'm no one's slave. If you want my services, you've got to pay for them." This seemed to disconcert him a little. You see, it did not follow along the traditional lines of evoking evil spirits according to the ancient legends. As a matter of fact, stories, Gone West 116, of these sort of things emanated almost solely from the mouth of the magician and were, doubtless, colored accordingly. After a few moments he said, "What is it that you demand?" Now the correct answer, I suppose, should have been your immortal soul, but I didn't care a twopenny guss about his soul. So it was my turn to hesitate. At last I replied, "What have you to offer me?" At once came the answer, "My soul. That's no use to me, and in any case it's damned already. No, I want something which will benefit me personally." "Well, what if I give you a mortal body so that you walk this earth in the semblance of a man? Can you do this, for I have not an astral body?" I inquired. "Nevertheless, I can manufacture one for you and so enable you to obtain control of a physical one." And he spoke the truth, for by his knowledge of the occult he was able to draw around him a host of empty astral shells and of the lighter elementals. Seizing on one of the latter, I molded it into a semblance of my former self and found I had an astral body. Then, going over to the medium, I with his assistance built up a real material body. I gave a shout of delight. After all that nightmare of horror, I was back on earth again. But even as I did so, I felt that it was but a temporary release. "Can I go outside?" I inquired. "I doubt it," he replied. "Still, you can try." I climbed up the stone stairs and came out into the broad daylight. The effect was magical as well as unpleasant. I seemed to dissolve, or at least my physical covering did. I hurried down into the cellar, and we had to start the materializing again. "Well," I said, "a body which melts in the sun is not much good. You'll have to do something better than that." "You can always," he whispered, "take control of someone, and with care this materialized kind of body will enable you to get about in the dark." In return for this, I agreed to help the magician in his plans. Gone West 117, Chapter 14, The Evil That They Wrought. Gold, power, and revenge were the chief things he desired. At the same time, he did not despise lesser advantages. He had about a dozen women over whom he had acquired absolute control, and who were all mediumistic. These he used to help him materialize spirits and produce other phenomena. I helped him to acquire much gold. It was a simple process. I could pass through matter in my astral form and dematerialize some of the gold, carry it out into a place of safety, and there it would take up again the material elements, which for a time had been scattered. This process needed expenditure of considerable willpower, and an easier method was for me to take control of some denizens of the house in which the gold lay when asleep or in a trance. These would collect as much as they could carry and convey it to some place arranged by the magician and myself. Then they would return, and would have no recollection of what had happened next morning when they awoke. Once or twice they were followed and arrested, but though they were punished for theft, no suspicion fell on the student of the occult. Of course, when arrested, I cleared out and left the unfortunate spirit to re-enter his body and shoulder the responsibility. I was just as useful to my master in carrying out his schemes of revenge, for he had many enemies. He had a particular dislike of all forms of religion, and vented it upon the clergy whenever he got an opportunity. At first he contented himself with slight damage. Tricks were played on his victims by elementals. Things were thrown about the room, crockery was smashed. When asleep his victim was awakened by having the clothes pulled off the bed, his face smacked, and his nose tweaked. But as time wore on and he found that he could do these things with impunity, his vicious character developed. Pinching and teasing gave place to physical violence. His victims were beaten black and blue or thrown downstairs, and attempts were made to set the house on fire. As the phenomena became more and more malevolent, the elementals for the most part dropped out, and even the spirits of the dead who had served him began to resist. They did not dare openly to defy him, for he had methods of making even them suffer, but they did the work half-heartedly and badly. J. W. But how did he make the spirits suffer? By his will. He, as it were, hypnotized them. This batch were weak-willed folk whom he compelled to do what he liked. He made them suffer, if they resisted, just as we make each other suffer in hell. He found, however, that though I could not be threatened and bullied, yet I was far more willing than they to inflict suffering upon men. Meanwhile I had not neglected my own interests. Besides settling a few old scores and even partaking again, when materialized or controlling, of some of Earth's former pleasures, I had also been building up my influence over my master. Some of the scenes in that old cellar under his house would have filled you with amazement. There would be at least a dozen of his girl mediums, some normal, others in trance, and in addition sometimes as many as a dozen materialized spirits. Except myself, these spirits came from the astral plane, and were constantly changing as one after another hurled themselves out of their astral bodies through one or more of the occult sins. These materialized spirits would stand or sit and talk and even laugh and sing and dance. Nor were these innocent recreations all, but I will draw a veil. Sometimes in the best vein of medievalism the wizard would celebrate the Black Mass, and we were the congregation. Meanwhile, however, I found it necessary constantly to renew my astral body. The mere fact that it was not really my own rendered it fragile and liable to disintegrate, and, gone west 118, further, the evil I was constantly doing hastened the dissolution. The result was that, despite obsessing many people, I was constantly requiring new astral bodies. At length my master called upon me to murder a man who had somehow got on the track of some of his deeds. I followed him to his house unseen, and between 1 and 2 in the morning set to work. Standing at the foot of his bed, I willed, and as I did so became visible in my astral body. The dull red glow which always seemed to accompany me shed no illumination beyond making me visible. I willed still harder, and the wretched man saw all around him a host of evil shapes, bloated monsters, elementals of every form and kind, while besides these were the malevolent faces of evil men and women. They shrieked death to the traitor, tear him to pieces, and almost every moment they rushed at him as if about to carry out their threats. They were unable to do so, for it is very difficult for a non-physical being to hurt the body of a mortal unless he has done something to put it in their power. But this wretched victim did not know that, and he was in an agony of terror. Then I cried aloud, "Have you forgotten Anna? We are here to avenge her. She is now in hell, and has sent us to bring you there also." As a matter of fact she had not sent us, and we did not know whether she was in hell or not. He screamed, "My God, after all these years must that sin rise up and condemn me? We laughed derisively and went on in chorus, she calls, she calls. Come away, come away. We rushed at him again and again, we cursed him and jeered at him, and so all night long till morning broke we tormented him. The next night it was the same, and again on the third night. And all the while I kept urging him on, better death, kill yourself, there is no hope. You are going mad. Better kill yourself before you go mad and kill someone else. Oh, Anna, can you not forgive me? I was but a young man and did not realize all it meant. Then one of the spirits assumed the shape of Anna, and, standing at the foot of the bed, cursed him, until, driven desperate, he sprang out of bed and, seizing a razor, cut his throat. My master was delighted by the success of these operations, and I urged him on to attempt something similar against a young priest whom he hated. This man had denounced him as being in league with the devil, which was largely true, and therefore angered my master the more. We plagued him. But though we caused him much annoyance by disturbing his sleep and so forth, we failed to hurt him much. Then I inspired one of the prettiest village maids to fall desperately in love with him. She followed him about for weeks, and finally threw herself on her knees in the church, while pretending to confess, and begged for his love. This refused, I turned her love to anger, and she spread all sorts of ugly rumors concerning him. Then we attacked him again more fiercely. We scoffed at his religion and told him it was false, or else the good God would not allow us to come to him. We told him he was about to be disgraced, and we urged him to escape the consequences of his evil life by suicide. The poor devil had had a remarkably innocent life, as a matter of fact, and was not quite such a fool as not to know it. We persecuted him like this for weeks until, at length one night he cried, I believe you are sent by that wretched old man whom I denounced as in league with the devil. I'll go and tell him what I think of him now. At once we urged him to do so, for, once there, it would be strange if our master could not finish him off. Seizing a crucifix, he stepped out into the darkness, and we followed him, jeering and threatening him. Gone West 119. It was a wild night, a fit setting to the tragedy. The wind howled and the rain beat in his face. Overhead the lightning flashed and the thunder roared. I shrieked in his ear, hark to the voice of God denouncing you. You hypocrite, look at his lightning threatening to blast you. See how the whole face of heaven is black against you. Accursed of God and man, soon will you come to us in hell. At length he reached the door of my master's house and knocked. It was opened, and he found himself in a dark passage. No one spoke, and he stumbled forward seeking a door. The first one he reached was locked, and so was the second, for some of us had gone forward to warn the magician. But a door at the end was not fastened. He opened this, and, entering, found the magician waiting for him in a dimly lighted study. The priest denounced him fiercely, but the magician answered not a word, but gazed fixedly at him till his denunciation died slowly away, and he stood there silent, a disheveled figure, with a hunted look upon his face. At length my master spoke, you fool, what made you come here? Your doom is sealed. He began to chant an invocation, and as he did so we gathered round and recommenced our work of persecuting the poor wretch. Again the master spoke, tomorrow you will be denounced before the whole of your congregation. I have two women here who will bear witness that you seduced them and were in the habit of visiting them here. I caught you tonight, and it is because I have suspected you for some time and done my best to frustrate your evil designs that you have denounced me as in league with the evil one. It is false, he shrieked, and you know it. I will deny it and tell the whole world of the evil spirits who obey your commands. And who will believe you? If they don't consider the story a lie, they will declare it is due to drink or madness. No, my fine fellow, you're done for, and it will be a nasty blow for religion too. While he was speaking he threw a heavy weight at the priest, which felled him to the ground. Don't kill him yet, I urged. Wait till he has been thoroughly discredited. Not I, he replied. I only intend to obtain some evidence of his guilt, a few trinkets which the two women can produce as evidence, a lock or two of his hair, To begin with, this handkerchief, and this seal from his watch chain. Can't we get him to commit some sin? I urged. My master jumped at the idea. But, almost at the same moment, we were overwhelmed with a flood of light. It seemed to burn and scorch me, and its whiteness was so intense that no words of mine can describe it. This light came from a gigantic spirit of commanding and awful presence, his guardian angel. He spoke, and his words rang out like a trumpet. No man may be tempted beyond that which he is able to resist. Ye have been permitted to tempt and persecute this man that he might come forth from the temptation strengthened by it, but your work is finished. The cup of your iniquities is filled to the brim. Go down to the depth of hell, and go thither also, thou spirit from hell, return to a place even lower than that from which thou camest. As he spoke, the fire seemed to burn me through and through, and the magician fell dead. His spirit rapidly separated from its body, and then the astral body, exposed to that terrible light, shivered and shattered and fell away. The naked spirit fell with an agonized shriek, and vanished from my sight. At the same instant I felt myself whirling through space down into utter darkness. But when I realized I was in hell, I was not back in my old kingdom or in the city of hate. I had sunk still lower, and had almost reached the bottom division of hell. But of what befell me there I will tell you at another time. Gone West 120, J. W. Before I go, can you explain why you appeared red when you came back to Earth? H. J. L. Interrupted, I think it was not only because the sorcerer expected to see him like that, but more because his aura was full of the red rays which represent anger and hate. As you know, our auras change color with the passion that dominates us at the time. J. W. Your story, officer, grows more and more extraordinary as it proceeds. I doubt whether that part about the magician will be believed, though I know you are telling the truth. You see, magic has fallen into such disrepute, hardly anyone believes in it now. The officer. I don't care a damn whether they believe it or not. It is true. And only by relating it can I explain what next befell me. I should not have sunk lower if it had not been for that adventure. H.J.L. Goodbye, Jack. You must be off now. Next moment I lost consciousness. J.W. Gone West 121, Chapter 15, His Punishment. The Second Division. Real Devils, Transvision, May 18, 1914. The officer resumed his narrative. As soon as I realized my position, I began to hunt about, and was not long in discovering that, bad as the division above had been, this was worse. The darkness seemed more intense and the place seemed very empty. But this latter was not for long. I heard wild yells of despair, shrieks, and screams, and out of the darkness burst a herd of spirits, and behind them I saw for the first time the real spirits of evil, of which the devils usually described are but shadows. I had seen those shadows occasionally on the astral plane. They were the figures formed by the imagination of those who had believed in them, but these were something different. They had not bat's wings, cloven hoofs, or horned heads, as usually depicted, though the devils formed by the imagination of men and found on the astral plane had them. These spirits, who had never been men, were some of the most appalling creatures it is possible to imagine. They were driving the herd of spirits before them, lashing at them with what were apparently whips. As they struck, they cried out, "How like you, your master, the devil?" Then they shouted the most fearful blasphemies, and screamed, "Blaspheme, you swine, blaspheme! We are the real gods. The things you call gods are but figments of your brains." Even as they were shouting this, they reached me, and one struck me across the face. Acting on the principle I had always followed, I turned upon him savagely. But this time it was no use. Again and again I was struck, and knew that at length I had found my master. I fell writhing to the ground beneath these savage blows, but at once someone plunged what appeared to be a goad into me, and I sprang up with a yell and rushed madly forward with the rest of the herd. Now began a period of awful terror. On and on we were hunted through these great dark spaces, without stay or intermission, till I began to feel as if all that was really I was being hammered out of me. We could not speak to each other, we simply stumbled and fell, got up again, ran on, heedless of each and all. There were men and women here side by side.